This is The Beautiful Game.
Is this the opener? Yes, it is! That's what they came to see! The name is Messi.
Vinicius Junior is in here, and it's two.
Modric. Now he'll unleash one! Sensational goal!
Mbappe, Griezmann, Pogba! It is France. It will be some can-can on the Champs-Élysées tonight.
So we'll hook that cross in. Pulisic! Oh, lovely hat-trick! What a night!
On today's beautiful game, we've got group play. This is The Beautiful Game, episode number 2. I'm your host, Alex Hardy, and thrilled to be back with you as we continue our coverage throughout the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. It will come to a head for Team USA Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Pacific, where I am in Southern California, 2 Eastern, 10 p.m. local time in Doha. And listen, this is going to be the biggest match the U.S. has had in decades. I will explain that to you, and not only what is at stake, not just for the knockout stage, but where it puts us as a nation before we ourselves, along with our Canadian brothers to the north, our Mexican amigos to the south, hosting that North American World Cup just 4 years from now. So there's a lot at stake for Team USA. But first, I want to get to where they want to be, which is advancing to the knockout stage. We already have 3 teams advancing after just 2 games played in group play. I spent a lot of time talking about France, so I will get to them shortly. They have won their first 2 matches, as has Brazil and Portugal. I want to start with Brazil because they have a big question on their hands. Are they capable of winning a World Cup without Neymar in the lineup? Neymar, of course, sustaining that injury in their first game, the 2-0 victory over Serbia. Will they go out and beat Switzerland 1-0, setting themselves atop Group G, obviously 1 game left to play. And we're wondering where the offense comes when one of the greatest players in the world right now isn't on the field. Well, the biggest surprise, I think, to all of us was that it was the defensive-minded Casemiro who made the difference, the goal in the 83rd minute, a guy who is the absolute engine of the central midfield, really playing just ahead of the center backs, protection for them, making sure that the middle of the field goes unscathed. I mean, for a man that scored 7 goals in just his last 68 appearances for Brazil, it was clinical finishing from him and something that was clearly desperately needed. But it's not all on the person you'd least suspect to make the difference for Brazil. Vinicius Jr. had what we believed was a goal until VAR told us otherwise. He was offsides on that play. That coming in the 63rd minute. But what really surprised me was hearing Kaká after this match, the Brazilian legend, saying that what is already a strong group without Neymar, he could just be the cherry on the cake. Does Brazil have enough attacking power in it without Neymar? That is yet to be seen. It's unlikely we see him in the game against Cameroon, certainly when they don't need him, but he's going to need additional time. But what's sweet about cherry on a cake compared to Switzerland, who, again, I think is easy to root for because they do have the world's best chocolate, they are in the driver's seat with their final match against Serbia. The basement dwellers of Group G could help Switzerland get through, and that would be pretty exciting to see. I do want to mention, though, that with the question marks that we have for Brazil, Switzerland certainly has some of their own, but the bright spot, I believe, if this is it for Switzerland, and we hope it's not, Breel Embolo gave us, I think, the moment of the tournament for them when he scored the lone goal in their 1-0 victory over Cameroon, the nation he was born in. He scores the goal, refuses to celebrate, refuses to make any kind of gesture in deference to where he was born, his family immigrating to Switzerland. It was a beautiful moment that, like I mentioned previously with Saudi Arabia, when we get one shining moment, Breel Embolo defeating Cameroon will certainly be on that list. It'll be exciting to follow up with that third match of Group G, really it coming down to whether Switzerland can advance beyond Cameroon. Serbia seems to be just out of reach, unless, of course, they do surprise and beat Switzerland in that final match. Portugal advanced to the knockout round with their 2-0 victory over Uruguay, much more dominant than just two goals would show. And it's just a sweet taste of relief for Cristiano Ronaldo, who professionally has essentially lit his career on fire. I know we're in the twilight. Manchester United's return was probably as bad as it possibly could have gone. And now, surprisingly, and again, in the world of producing that I'm a part of, you certainly have a bias when you land that big interview. And after Piers Morgan had the opportunity to talk to Ronaldo, he's now rooting for Portugal to win the whole thing. Again, that interview got him out of Manchester United, but got him into the back of that in the World Cup, becoming the first man that, walking on earth, that scored in 5 separate World Cups. He didn't score in this 2-0 victory, though. Bruno Fernandes deserves all the credit, scoring the brace. And this was just, again, a dominant performance with 70% of the possession going to Portugal against Uruguay. And this is a team, Uruguay that is known for having great attacking players. Edison Cavani comes to mind. Luis Suarez still coming off the bench, hopefully taking a bite out of the action as he goes along the rest of the tournament. And Rodrigo Betancur, who had a brilliant run only to be denied by Diego Costa. It was awesome to watch him carve through the Portugal center backs, but just coming up short. And really, it's caused an issue for a team that was expected to compete not quite on the tier of Brazil, Portugal, or even Argentina, of course, representing South America. But we'd expect a lot more from Uruguay, who has yet to score a goal in the World Cup. I mean, shoot, even the U.S. was capable of that. And again, shout out to the pitch invader who interrupted this game, waving a pride flag around. You don't want to be disrupting or creating any distractions on the world's greatest stage, but nonetheless, there's a reason they're there, and the risks that they're taking to spread a message of equality, I'm with it. And France winning their second match earlier this week. And the only reason I bring them up, because I went so in-depth on it in episode 1, there are rumors coming out of Spain now with multiple media outlets reporting that Karim Benzema could be on his way back to Qatar, saying it was shocking the type of recovery that he has made. I'd mentioned the hip and the ankle injuries, and he might be available come knockout round. So now it comes to rest versus rust when they have Tunisia rounding out their group play action. Raphael Varane, Olivier Giroud, they have their concerns, so taking the time off might be good. Just for clarification, Varane has had that back injury that's plagued him, and meanwhile, Olivier Giroud is just, well, he's old. So if they need to take the field just to stay in form, I understand it, but at the same time, it's a great opportunity to test the depth that France has. Again, with the injuries I mentioned to the likes of Paul Pogba, Luis Hernandez sustaining that first matchup, and whether or not we have Karim Benzema returning, we've got to see where this depth is. And we've got to pour some out to our homies that have already been knocked out. We have 2 historic goals for 2 teams with little World Cup history, and for Canada and Qatar, having the opportunity to score their first ever World Cup goals is fantastic, but it is just not enough to hang around. When we talked about the 2026 World Cup coming to North America, with Canada hosting some of these matches, they have an automatic bid. So we're excited to see Alphonso Davies and where that young group is 4 years from now. Something we'll certainly be saying about the United States, which is where I get to with the Iran matchup. We can circle back all the way to 1998, when a lot of you listeners were just getting into podcasting, right? I was listening to podcasts before they were cool. I remember listening to Alex, 8 years old, doing that World Cup podcast. Oh, my mistake. I didn't start until a little bit later. But there they were, USA, Iran. They are in Paris. This was a match that was nearly fitting for a Ben Affleck movie adaptation. As long as we're making Argo references, 1998, we're barely 20 years removed from the extraction plan in Tehran, with members of the U.S. Embassy being held and under siege, and the U.S. men's national team, in response, 18 years later, they lost 2-1, eliminated from the World Cup by Iran, which caused the team to implode, take a step back, and it took years for the team to recover. At the time, going after then-U.S. manager Steve Sampson, accused of failing to do his job, was unceremoniously released from the team a short time later. And there's a lot of distractions fast-forwarding now to 2022. How will it affect the players on both sides? Probably not at all. How will it affect me as a podcast host? It gives me more to talk about. You're talking about the kind of bulletin board material and a really dumb decision. Whoever is responsible for the U.S. men's national team's social media tweeting out a picture of what they believed was a more aesthetically pleasing change to the Iranian flag, removing the symbol, has gotten the Soccer Federation in hot water, because photoshopping a nation's flag apparently is grounds to be completely eliminated from World Cup contention. That's one way of getting that automatic bid into the knockout round, but it's the U.S. that has a lot more to do to advance than Iran. And before moving forward with the matchup of Greg Berhalter and Carlos Quiroz, the managers against one another, Carlos Quiroz has already picked a fight with the former men's national team coach, Jurgen Klinsmann, who I am going to admonish. This has nothing to do with his poor performances at the helm of Team USA. This has everything to do with, for whatever reason, deciding to launch a culture war on how soccer is played in the Middle East from behind his pundit desk. I mean, for a guy who completely torpedoed our chances in multiple World Cups, now he's going to say that Iran and other Middle Eastern countries play a specific brand of soccer that's bad for the game and that is indicative of the type of manager Carlos Quiroz is. The Iranians took a lot of grief for how physical they were against Wales. And if the calls aren't going to be made, if these guys aren't getting carded, then there's a reasonable expectation for players to continue to play that way, regardless of what nation they come from. And there's no room in the world sport to be casting aspersions based on skin color, based on a style of play. The onus goes on coaching and proper officiating. If you have neither of those, then that's your problem. Not taking umbrage with any specific type of player. Oh, and also Jurgen Klinsmann completely tanked the U.S.'s World Cup chances 8 years ago. And I digress. Too many distractions, all circling around this 2022 rematch from 1998. And before fixing the U.S. offense in the podcast, you have to give credit to how this defense is playing. Shout out to Walker Zimmerman. I know the bad penalty against Gareth Bale, but here he is, the lone starting 11 player that currently plays in the MLS. And shout out to Tim Ream, who's making his U.S. men's national team debut at age 35. Again, third youngest team in this World Cup field, plus Tim Ream. He could be my dad. But these center backs are getting so much support from the midfield, and they've been exceptional, not only with helping out the likes of Tim Ream, Walker Zimmerman, but this Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie-led midfield is providing assistance in building the attack, and Adams in particular, worthy of that captain's armband, is winning 88% of his tackles. Plus, he has the maturity of someone well beyond his 23 years when addressing racism after being approached by an Iranian reporter who took exception to how he was pronouncing the name of his country, which I completely understand. And Tyler Adams, kudos to you. Just the kind of cool, calm temperament that needs to be had in the midfield, but hopefully has that light switch ability to be able to turn it on and provide pressure on the Iranian defense. Christian Pulisic, meanwhile, when you go from the Wales match to what he did in central midfield against England, Berhalter deciding to switch to a 4-4-2 formation, Pulisic was as good as you would ever expect for a five-year-old playing the game of soccer. He was just swarming the ball the entire game, making an impact against great English midfield players, just reducing them to forcing errant balls, making big mistakes, and just absolutely demonstrating this is the type of effort and energy you need to display. You are the face of this nation. You are our superstar player for Team USA, and that means no quit on offense, defense, any side of the ball. So I'm curious to see what Berhalter decides to do with Pulisic in a game that I'm going to describe. There's so much emphasis on needing to score goals against Iran. Pulisic may be better deployed as an outside winger, more up in the attack. However, if Iran is looking to play keep away, having Pulisic around the middle of the field, more around the ball, may be better suited for what U.S. needs. And what does the U.S. need? They need goals, bro. One goal in two matches. How can this attack get involved when Iran doesn't even need to win? After their 2-0 victory over Wales, Iran would need Wales to beat England 4-0 for a 0-0 draw to keep them out of the knockout round, so Berhalter tried to score goals. Haji Wright was inserted at the attack for the England game. Berhalter, of course, coveting his size and speed on the attack, the taller Haji Wright getting the nod over Josh Sargent, like we saw for the first game. Sargent, of course, one of my favorite players from the Wales game, setting up Christian Pulisic to Tim Weah for that opening goal. But it's not just trying to find that number 9 striker. USA just isn't scoring off of set pieces. They aren't converting their crosses. You have to give credit to the likes of Anthony Robinson or Sergiño Dest coming off of the wings and making crosses that put players like Pulisic and Weah into scoring position. But You can't leave yourself liable on defense. You have to go full throttle. You could be over-leveraging and leaving your defense vulnerable, but in a game where you at least have to score the first goal, this is the type of pressure where Pulisic might not be the right guy to be kicking every corner, to be on every free kick, to set up those set pieces. I'm asking a lot out of our fullbacks because I think they're our best athletes, simply put. And speaking of who some of our best athletes are, now might be a great time for Gio Reyna's technical ability to shine after getting in 15 minutes of action against England. 0 against Wales. We're moving in the right direction. The U.S. has to be able to pick apart Iran's defense. And on top of having control of the midfield, the number 9 striker position is something that we're still trying to find, rotating between Sargent and Haji Wright, or maybe it's time for Jesus Ferreira to get that opportunity. And it's a legitimate attacker that the U.S. needs, but Iran already has. Taremi has been having a wonderful season for Porto. I believe it's 5 goals in Champions League play so far, and they really don't need that many opportunities to make a difference. Iran, if it's a 0-0 game, is a complete disaster for the U.S. But imagine if they go down 1-0 at any point because Taremi has the ability to score from anywhere on the field once he gets into the attacking third. I'm concerned about what the U.S. is capable of doing. They can dominate the midfield. They can control the outside of the field with those fullbacks, and especially if Pulisic is out on the wing. But it's converting those opportunities. It's completing those crosses. It's finding a use for the set-piece coach that we hired earlier this year just for these types of moments. There's so much pressure being put on the U.S., and rightfully so. They represent what I believe is the best country on the earth. U.S. fans rightfully expect perfection, the best of the best, and typically they get that. And they get that in soccer with the women's national team as well. So it's about time, just ahead of the U.S. hosting, along with the rest of their North American comrades, their own World Cup in 2026 on the world stage against an opponent we should be able to go toe-to-toe and get the advantage on. There's no reason why the U.S. cannot come out with anything other than a victory. There's no decision other than a victory that is suitable enough for this team to move on. And instead of being used to disappointment, why not? Why not make the difference now? I'm just thrilled for another opportunity to represent our country with the Beautiful Game podcast. And I'm thrilled, hopefully, the next time I'm with you, we continue to talk about the U.S.'s chances as they advance to the knockout stage. But win or lose, we're not going to be fair weather fans. We're going to understand what it takes to be better, how we can be better. And I believe in the Beautiful Game, and I believe in Team USA. I'm Alex Hardy. Make sure you stay with me for the next installment of the Beautiful Game right here, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm thrilled. Let's go. Go, go, USA.